Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Back in the summer, I posted a picture to my Facebook page from a photojournalist friend. It was a picture of two garden statues of black children. They were dressed in overalls and straw hats, and they were fishing. It was right out of Mark Twain, but it was in Northumberland County. The statues were similar to the garden jockeys you see around with the guy holding a lantern. The picture was sent just after the George Floyd incident. You'll remember that was back in the summer. George Floyd was the black man from Minnesota who died after he was pinned face down for nearly 9 minutes by police. Underneath the post, I asked a simple question. What are you doing to stop racism in Northumberland? Nobody answered the question. Some people took offense to the garden statues. Others gave a history lesson about these types of statues. Still others took offense that I should dare to post such a picture. And then there were some personal attacks, and when that happened, I took the picture down. Nobody seemed interested in answering my original question. Earlier this month, there were two incidents involving racist graffiti, one in Harwin and the other in Port Hope. It is rare to see this blatant expression of racism in Northumberland. Police are investigating both incidents. But on today's show, there's an interview with the chair of the Race Relations Committee of Peterborough. It tries to shed some light on the incident, but it also looks at why these incidents occurred. It explores the systemic nature of racism in rural communities, and more importantly, what can or should be done as a response. Here is my interview with Charmaine Magumbe, chair of the Community Race Relations Committee of Peterborough. I'm so pleased to have with me today Charmaine Magumbe, chair of the Community Race Relations Committee of Peterborough. Welcome to Consider This.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Now, sometime on Sunday, October 4th, the Northumberland OPP were called to Harwood in the north of Hamilton Township after some graffiti was discovered. There was a swastika and the letters KKK spray painted on a rock along with other damage and the letters KYS, which I understand stands for kill yourself. When you hear of an incident like this, especially in a rural municipality, what goes through your mind?
Well, when I heard and you had sent me the article to this situation, my heart sunk because this is unfortunately becoming our world with the rhetoric that's out in the media. People are becoming emboldened to do these things. So it was really sad to hear that people have taken it to this extreme to want to even make it out in the public sphere like this. It was really very, very disappointing to hear that someone would go to that length to do this. Horrible, horrible.
When you say emboldened, what do you think is motivating them to be emboldened?
Well, I think, or what I'm seeing and what I'm reading is the fact that people are with, especially with our leadership per se, i.e. Donald Trump, it's people coming out of the woodwork. You know, they're coming out of the woodwork with him saying these very horrible things about people who were of different races and cultures. And this is that kind of speaking is filtering up into our system, into our world. So, for example, when they, you know, the KKK, they were hooded back in the 60s. People were hooded. You didn't want to walk around saying that you have such hateful things to say about people because they're different from you. But nowadays, they're not hooded. You know, they're so blatant to say, yeah, this is me. And It's horrible. You don't. The KKK is no longer per se, in the society. But what's now in the society is unhooded KKK, and that's even scarier. And that's where you get these people doing those things. It's just I just can't believe like people nowadays are not ashamed to say, feel. I don't know, not, want to hide who they are, and but now they're coming out and saying these things out in public. It's bad, it's wrong.
Have you seen any rise in the statistics in terms of race-related incidents?
So that's a really good question because sometime actually that's a really good question because sometime I believe it was this year or last year, the same thing happened here in Peterborough for the first time. It has never happened with that the Nazi sign, and I can't pronounce it, but was written on somebody who a Jewish home, and she had been living in Peterborough for over 30 something years, and she's never had anything like that happen to her. It was the first time, and it was just devastating. She was very visibly upset, crying that someone would go out in to do that on her house. It was like at her house they put the sign. So she was it was very painful for her to witness that, and she had been in Peterborough for like over 30 years or more, and nothing like that. So people are, like I said, coming out of the woodwork and being more brazen with their anti-Semitic and racist views.
Now, some people listening might say, well, this is only an isolated incident. But only 2 weeks later, then on October 18th, again on a, it was a Sunday, several pumpkins were smashed in Port Hope. And then the police discovered that there were some racial slurs written on several other pumpkins. Is there any significance to the fact that we don't see incidents like this for a very long time, and then within less than a few weeks, we see two?
Yes. Well, the thing is, the first time, I don't know if they were able to even catch the person who did it, so there was no consequences to what happened. But now the second time, I guess with what the first time they weren't caught, so it kind of snowballs into if they could do it, why can't we do it? Sort of thing. And this is, you had mentioned something about basically why is this happening? Why is this snowballing? And I really feel it's because of what's being put out there by the rhetoric that's in our public sphere, being people being more brazen and basically getting away with it. And unfortunately, I feel that the first time they did get away with it, we have to put a stop to it. Form together as a community. In Coburg, we had something similar per se in Peterborough, where this somebody a group was putting your posters around that was very negative towards immigrants, and they were plastering the community with these signs. And so, as a community, we got together and worked to take off these signs and just really saying, no, we're not that community. We are not that. We are not against people who are different. So, yeah.
There was a political response to the incident in Hamilton Township. Mayor Bill Kane said in an interview, "This is not typical of our area," and I'm quoting him. He went on to say, and again, this is a quote, "We live in a great country, and I guess we have a few bad apples." How would you assess this kind of political response?
A few bad apples. Yes, they like to see a few bad apples. Boils a whole bunch of, what is it? I can't remember saying. Anyhow, yeah, it's a culture. It's more than a few bad. It's a culture of thinking, a certain ways that's been buried. It's a white supremacy culture of that whiteness is, how would you say it? Is a default of being normal, and anybody else who is different is abnormal, right? So it's more than just a few bad apples. It is the way, it's a mind setting, it's a way we think of how we see people who are different. And that is, it's very difficult to really deal with, because it's what they say is implicit bias, unconscious bias towards people who are different. And in a rural community where you have most of the people there are, I would believe, mostly all white, it's very hard for someone who is of a different nationality, different race, a different religion, to try to break through the barriers that's there, because you all the things unconsciously, all the negative things you feel about people that are different unconsciously could work havoc. I mean, as far as this situation, right? You know, but people are, of course, as Canadian, they're very polite. They would never really say to your face anything that per se, but behind your back, they are behind closed doors. They, you know, maybe making racist jokes or things like that, that at the end of the day, you make people feel, people who are different from you can sense that they are not truly welcomed in a community. And until you deal with that unconscious bias, people's thinking racist thoughts about people who are different, until you deal with it and become anti-racist, then we are going to have incidents like this. And unfortunately, now it's becoming more out in the public. Before, it was behind closed doors, you know, people make those jokes and things like that. But now people are just going out there and doing whatever, you know, being more overtly racist, which is horrible.
If you were to give some advice to the mayor, what would you have advised him to say?
What I would advise is that you need to come together as a community and work together, forming really anti-racist policies, but breaking down the barriers so that the community is a more of a welcoming community, that creating an inclusive community, and that takes conversation. And but the problem is that when you're living in like especially an all-white community, people, the whites will say there's, you know, racism is not a problem, it's a few bad apples, right? So there'll be, you know, why should we have to really even talk about it when it's not even an issue? But it is an issue. Even if you're living in an all-white community, it is an issue. And the fact that it's an all-white community makes it even more of an issue, because the fact that people are not wanting to come and live there. Why is it that people do not want to come and live in that community that are different from you? Is it because it's harder for them to stay and feel welcomed? So it's really hard conversations to have, really, really hard. And but the conversation is needed so that the community can become more diverse and more inclusive and more welcoming. So it's a hard conversation to have, to talk about anti-racism. But that's the conversation that you would need to have. And hopefully we'll put a stop to these things, i.e. People making these racial slurs on public spaces.
When the George Floyd incident took place in the spring, there were a host of local politicians making statements against racism and condemning what had happened. But there's been nothing since that's been said or done by any council or any politician. What should we as a community reasonably expect from these institutions and community leaders when it comes to race relations?
Well, what I would love to see is more of anti-racist policies in the institutions, so that it breaks down barriers and everybody has an equal footing or an equal share of the apple pie, right? For example, job opportunities. It's when you're in an all-white community, people who are applying for jobs tend to reflect who are in the community. So if you do want to bring a more diverse, inclusive community, you would work together, first of all, the training in your workplace for anti-racist training, but also making policies saying we want to hire people who are not like us, right? And that takes more work because at the end of the day, you may not get those applications of people who are different. So you're going to have to work harder to bring those people into your community, really working harder. You could do target employment. And sometimes when a person who is of color or racialized people, they might not even feel confident to apply to a job because they feel that they may not get it. So, you know, so it would take it will take work to try to bring those people who are racialized into communities, especially that are like rural communities. But there, racialized people do want to live in rural communities. They do want to be there, but they have to feel that we want you to be here and we're doing the work to make you feel at home. It's really important to make people who are racialized feel at home, right? That's what I would say.
Okay, now people in the community reacted differently in the face of these kinds of incidences. So, for example, Faye McFarland, who is the head of the Citizens Council for Hamilton Township Ratepayers Association, said, and I'm quoting her now, "We do not typically see this in this area. We have graffiti, but not this type of message. It's not what we stand for as a community." Then she went on to say, and I'm quoting her again, "It is not being shrugged off here. People here know each other. They care about each other. And this is what Hamilton Township is." What advice would you give McFarland or others who care about their community and object to this type of incident?
In general, like, of course, Canadians really do want to roll out the welcome mat and say that, you know, we are not people who put racial slurs on buildings, right? The majority of people are not that. The majority of people are very offended when they see things like that and do react like, yes. But it's an underlying issue. You may not be that person to do that. So it's an underlying issue that needs to be tackled, and it's an underlying issue that needs to be dealt with everybody in that community, saying, how is it that, you know, even the one or two people who did this, how is it that, you know, we could prevent this from ever happening? It doesn't take, even let's say, for example, we had an incident, or I had an incident, same thing happened, at the school my kids attended, same thing, a racial slur. It was on the school wall. It was very painful. My kids are the only, I live in Peterborough, also my kids are the only blacks in the whole entire school, primary school. And it was a racial slur against black people, let's just say. They came home, they were in tears. It was very painful. And the person who did it, fortunately, they did catch him. And he was the type of person who he was the type of person who was like, I would never say anything bad against, I don't know why he did it, but I mean, I don't know, he did that. And he was the type of person that would be like, I would never do something like that, but he did. So it is an underlying thing that, you know, you think you may not do it. Who knows? Maybe you were egged on to do something stupid like, you know, what that just happened. So I would say to to any of the people who are in charge, really look at your community. How is it, really reflective of being that welcoming, you know? And it's hard because and another thing is, people who are racialized, they're not going to want to talk about their incidents that happened to them while they're in the community. You know, if they have racist incidents, they're not going to want to talk to someone who is a white person and say, this is what happened to me. But as a community, you have to come together and say, how could we prevent this from ever happening again? Do we need to have, you need to have more of these discussions on breaking down the racial tension that, you know, that's happening. So it's really hard. You would, council would really need to really look at themselves. And like I said, it's a difficult conversation to have, but it's a needed conversation because hopefully going forward, it won't happen again. But you need to have a group in your community that says, what are we going to do about this? Like when the person here put up those racial slurs, we had a community, we had people in our community that were going around and scraping off those posters and saying no to hate.
Now, around the time of George Floyd, a group calling itself Coburg Black Lives Matter held a march that ended up in front of the police station. Now, several hundred people showed up. Drawing from your knowledge of race relations, where does this kind of reaction fit into the larger picture of addressing racism in a community?
They wouldn't, what did you say, they wouldn't use their names?
The organizers wouldn't let their names be used in articles talking about the march.
Oh, really? That's very interesting. I feel that those protests need to, from the protests, people need to say, this is what we want, right? With Black Lives Matter, you know, defunding the police is what we want. We want a better community. We want a community that's inclusive. We want a community that's not racist. We want a community that's not anti-Black racism and against people who are racialized. This is what we want as when you're on the streets and the rallies, right? So that that reflection of these rallies should go then now to legislation, policy should be created. So for example, Black Lives Matter in Toronto has lobbied quite effectively in Toronto, so much so that now they've gotten rid of streaming in the education system because streaming, they used to, in the school system, they used to put Blacks into the more basic levels and not into the academic, like university level. So they got rid of that because they found that it was discriminating against racialized people. They probably have to do more than just get rid of streaming, but that's, you know, one of the steps. So it's taking that protest and saying, this is what we want. This is what, we're not going to be silent anymore. We are against what's happening here and now, and we want it to be a different. We want things to change.
But that's interesting because we've heard nothing about from this group since, and it feels like it was a blip. Like we react as a community, and then there's this dead silence. You know, how typical is this, and how effective is it in addressing racial issues in a community when it's like that? It's like hot and cold.
Well, with when we had the Black Lives Matter rallies here in Peterborough, we still do. I mean, I'm talking like it's past tense. We still have. We just had one regarding the George Floyd. So ours started in 2014. It was very, very connected to community race relations. So that those rallies continued with conversation as to how can we make things different in Peterborough. So as more than taking, you know, taking it from the streets to the politicians to legislation, right? So I'm not sure what's happening with the one in Coburg. I'm not sure if I know here, the BLM, Peterborough, they are active with getting their message out and continuing with getting the message out that things have to change. I know they're very active, and I'm not sure about the BLM in in your region. I don't know if you have a race relation committee in your region, but that's what I would really pitch for, a race relation committee to, if you don't have one, then it needs to happen. Our BLM is, we do support our BLM, and we have a race relations committee, so I'm not sure. That's what you would need to have. It's the bridge between this, getting that message from the streets to something that's formulated. It could be a committee. It could be the BLM. People who organized, you know, if they want to have a committee and then keep it going and saying, this is what we want. So... Do you have a race relation committee?
I'm not aware of one.
Okay, so that's maybe something of a starting place. Like, definitely.
We often associate this kind of act with an urban setting. And when you've been talking, you know, it's interesting you're mentioning Peterborough and Toronto. But it seems rare to learn about what's happening in a rural area. Is it true these kinds of rural incidents of racism are less frequent?
In a rural area, it's less frequent. I'm not sure about the statistics. I haven't really looked. I do know if you're statistically, as far as hate crimes are concerned, that Peterborough is up there. And it is a population of 100,000. So we are, but then again, our population in Peterborough is 96% white community. So I would think that with a higher whites, that there's probably a potential for it to be. Maybe they're not as blatant as to come out and put the KKK signs and stuff like that. Or of course, it may be a little bit, people don't covert, like not so out there saying it, but it's their message, it's their body language. How are they treating people who are different from them? That maybe people might be like, oh, I don't want to live here. You know,
it's interesting you say that, because I saw a quote from Black Lives Matter organizer from Oxford County in southwestern Ontario, and she said, and I'm quoting her, "Those of us living in rural areas are better at concealing racism." Is she right?
The people, you mean the white people are buried in concealing it?
In rural areas. She said, those of us living in rural areas are better at concealing racism. And I'm asking you, is she right?
They probably are better in the sense that they don't want to rock the boat. So they rather when they're, like if their parents live here and they're young enough, a lot of times the kids will just, you know, go to a bigger city. So they're very concealing because they don't want to deal with the issue. They don't want to rock the boat. They just want to get along with everybody. So they're not going to, that's what I said, like if you live in a rural community and you're racialized, you're not going to be talking to your, you know, your white neighbors about some racist incident that happened to them. They're going to, like, you know, they don't want to feel othered, right? So they don't want to feel like, oh, and then, you know, sometimes the person might say, oh, but, you know, maybe it hadn't to do with your race, you know, and it's just, so you just go along with the flow and you don't really rock the boat. Yeah, so I would say they're concealing it because they just try to keep it under the hat.
Well, it's interesting too, because the race relations survey in 2019 said rural residents are amongst a group of Canadians who are most likely to believe discrimination is no longer a problem in Canada. What does your experience tell you?
Yes, I could absolutely see that. Like I said, because, you know, it's like this. If you live in a community like Peterborough, or that's all white, chances are you're not going to be mixing with somebody who's racialized, right? So if you're mixing with someone who is like you, you know, you look up the paper and you see people who look like you, you turn on the TV, you see people who look like you, read magazines, you see people who look like you, you know, you're going to say, I don't know what these people are talking about, because everything is great, you know, because you're not mixing, right, with people who racialized. And then even if you do, those people are not going to be saying to you, oh, yes, you know, this happened to me. They're not going to, they're going to feel uncomfortable. They're not going to talk about it. So, but it is, and then the fear is that you're, you know, unbiased, implicit bias or unconscious bias, you know, how do you feel towards somebody who's racialized, right? What is your thoughts of towards racialized people? What is your stereotyping of those who are Black or those who are Indigenous, right? You know, that's because you don't mix with regular Black or Indigenous folks, you have the, most of the time you have the perception is what you see on TV of them. And a lot of times that perception or what you read is tends to be very negative. And so that's your imagery of them. So, and then, you know, so it's a whole thing of course.
It seems sometimes hard to get your head around what goes on in the community. I mean, you get incidents that were reported in the news this month, and then we had a community response to that and to the George Floyd incident. Then we learned from TSN in a report in July that a 16-year-old Pickering Panthers player faced a racial slur from an opposing player during a game in November of 2018 against the Northumberland Nighthawks, which is our local hockey league. Now, it seems like things like this happen and there's an immediate reaction, but there's always this undercurrent going on. You know, the garden statues on somebody's lawn, or the under-the-breath comments when tourists from various ethnic groups from Toronto come to our area. How do we address the systemic nature of racism in our community? I mean, what are some of the concrete steps? I know you've talked a little bit about this, but what can we do concretely so that we can start to address these kinds of things going on?
Well, I would say you, as a community, you need to... systemic is within, of course, institutions. That means that within institutions, they have to look at their policies and see, you know, how could they make their policies to be more of an anti-racist policy. So that's within the institution. Individually, you could, as an individual, self-education. So, become more aware of Black issues by reading books from, you know, definitely racialized people. Right now I'm in a book group. We're doing The Skin We're In by Desmond Cold, and it's in Peterborough, so I'm the, there's like 10 all white people that born and raised in Peterborough that's doing this book club. And I mean, it's great because they're able to talk about racism in Canada, you know, and whether or not they felt it was a thing, now they could see by reading that it is a thing. So, you know, educate yourself. I've just started a business, Afrocentric business, that has self-education for people who want to know more about anti-Black racism and how to be anti-racist. So, you know, they could go on my website and get that and be educated. Because of the fact that chances are you most likely won't, in an all-white community, get to really even befriend someone who is different from you. So get to know them via their voices. Really get to know their voices. When you have an opportunity to meet someone who is of a different culture or race, you know, look at them. This is what I tell people. Look at them like they are a white guy, right? Because when you meet a white guy, you do not say, oh, this white guy is a hip. You don't say, oh, he's into rock and roll, or you don't think right away, oh, he must be into country, or, you know, he must like McDonald's or something. I don't know. You know, like, you just think, oh, he's a white guy. He might be into classical. He might be into rock and roll. He might be into, who knows? He might be into jazz, right? You just think all these different things because then you have to get to know, oh yeah, he likes this, right? You don't just assume when you see a white guy that he's, you might, you don't assume that, you know, he has a degree or that he has high school or he has a PhD. You just, you don't assume those things. You just get to know this person to see what they're like. You don't just assume that, you know, so when you see a white guy, you just assume he could be anything he is because he is who he is. So I like to say, someone who is different from you, just don't assume anything about them. And just don't assume, just get to know them. Like, just, they may be, like, I'm into, I like square dancing. I mean, I love square dancing, you know, but people look at me with the, you know, I'm into hip hop, which I do like hip hop. So, you know, but don't just assume. And they're like surprised if I say, oh, yeah, I like square dancing. You know, and it's like, really? It's like, yeah, I love square dancing. So don't assume when you see someone who's different, you know, just look at them as like a white guy, like just as they're a blank slate, and they will fill you in with who they are as a person. Like, they will fill you in with their personality, their likes and dislikes. And another thing is, what I find, especially when you go into an all-white community, you need to listen, right? Listen to those people who are different, because a lot of times they usually do not get an opportunity to be heard. So the people who are racialized, indigenous, blacks, browns, they tend to be quiet in conversation, because if it's an all white situation, they don't even, they kind of like, you know, they tune them out. And so you really need to be willing to have silence and give them that space to talk. I don't know if that helps you.
It does. Charmaine Magumbe, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, you're welcome. I hope that helps.
It does. That was my interview with Charmaine Magumbe, chair of the Community Race Relations Committee of Peterborough, talking about racism. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com. Or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.